Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Pons. I'm a Master Certified Life Coach and an energy healer. I'm joined today with Pamela Shainhouse. Pamela Shainhouse is a certified DEI and fundraising professional with over 30 years' experience in the fashion, apparel, and nonprofit sectors. As the president and founder of the Shainhouse Group, a division of Alley Style, Inc., she provides DEI training and policy work for various business sectors, as well as executive coaching, strategic planning, and public speaking services. Pamela is passionate about promoting size inclusivity and diversity in fashion, as well as honoring the legacy of her late daughter, Allie, who founded a charity for young adults with cancer. Pamela created Allie Style, a sustainable and stylish clothing line for curvy women, which was featured at the first and only Curvy Run show at Toronto Fashion Week in 2012. Pamela is also the president of Allie's Journey, a nonprofit that delivers comfort bags to young cancer patients. Pamela is a sought-after keynote speaker and a recipient of several awards, including the Woman of the Year by Shabbat Jewish Women in 2009. Pamela, welcome.
Thank you very much. You know what? It looks like I better rewrite my bio because I forgot about all the work I'm doing in accessibility. Thanks for reading it for me because, missed that.
As we wonderfully talk about before we hit record, how big of a challenge it is for me to write a bio right now. This is an example. It's like life moves fast, but also I'm living, breathing, being all of these multifaceted approaches in life. It's not just about the doing. It's about what I'm feeling, what I'm embodying. And so a bio has become one of my biggest challenges because that's more of the historical patriarchal ask of us of like, who are you? And it's typically more like, what do you do?
I think you're absolutely right, number one. And as you're reading this, I'm going, oh, crap. So I wrote down here, nobody can see me, it says, I need to rewrite my LinkedIn.
Well, there we go. This is good because we can do kind of a rewrite in real time so that you can use the podcast episode as part of your bio. So
I'm going to do that.
Pamela, what moves are you excited to be making right now? And what is missing from your bio?
Well, first of all, Amy, thank you for having me. I am very pleased to be here. And all of it was true. That's the good thing. I know lots
of
people
throw
in things that they, you know, nothing is true. All of it is true. But the one thing that's happening now in my life is the work that I've moved into in the past year, the focus of accessibility in the workplace. So what the Shainhouse Group is doing, not only in the fashion world, but what we are doing is providing training and policy development in the field of accessibility in the workplace and inclusion, diversity, and equity training also. I put accessibility at the forefront of everything because if you don't have an accessible workforce, and if your workforce doesn't understand the importance of accessibility in the workforce and how to deal with, let's talk about a retailer who throws all of these racks right beside each other where I walk with a walker and I can't get through the racks. So if I can't get through the racks, somebody with a wheelchair, an electric wheelchair for sure can't get through the racks. But these retailers couldn't care less. And they believe that they are a code. So there are very few people. I sent my interns off to do something that I hate research. I'm telling you, if there's one thing that I hate more than anything, it's research. I'm not good at it. And you know what? I know that when you're not good at something, hand it to somebody else who is good at it. So I got them out to do a competitive analysis because I was doing an export plan. I'm from Toronto, Canada, you know, so doing an export plan into the States. And I had an intern go out and see who does what I do. I can't be the only one who does this. I have to tell you, she found two people who do not exactly what I do, but close to it. And the reason is that most people do DEI training and other people do accessibility training. But there isn't somebody who morphs them together where you can understand all of the elements and apply one to the other. So that's the kind of work that I've been doing now. And that's what I'm adding to my LinkedIn profile.
I had an interesting conversation with a recent guest that just pinged in my mind something you just said. And I didn't know this until she shared this on the episode that DEI, I know you're in Canada, we're in the US. In the US anyway, DEI was birthed from a military program. And that original military program for DEI was racism based. A lot of things don't get looked at or adapted for what it's trying to fit or like what it's trying to solve for. So what we see now as DEI is the inclusion piece of DEI, actually thinking a lot about accessibility, I find in my corporate experience especially, is that the accessibility, it's almost like it's like forgotten from DEI.
It's forgotten from everything, first of all. In the States, you have to abide by the ADA. No yeah. question asked. Okay. Yeah. In Canada, we have each province has their own Disability Act. So I'm in Ontario. So as of December 2023, just a few months ago, they had to abide by the AODA, which is the Accessibility Ontario Disability Act. And I can't tell you how many people said, what's that? And you know what? There's a huge fine and the government's coming right at you. And you have to appreciate people. The truth is that, you know, I have to get the right stats. Not only do I not like research, I don't like stats either, but gotta learn them. 70% of people in worldwide have an invisible disease. I was born with a bone disease. At the age of 5, I was diagnosed with it. I've had over 30 operations. So it's a bone disease that works through your joints. So I've had 30 operations throughout my lifetime. I'm in chronic pain every day from the disease. And I understand what disability is. But I have to tell you, this isn't a word of a lie, because I don't lie anyway, Amy. You know, you get what you get here with me. I have a handicap license plate, like not license plate, you know, a certificate. And I parked in a parking lot that was pretty close to the store that I was going into. And I can walk without my walker. I have a cane or whatever. I can walk without my walker. So I'm walking to the store without my walker, and a man comes and says to me, "Hey, lady, must be a mental handicap, right?" And I went, "What? You just sit there and you get hit when people don't see it. If I was walking with my walker or my cane, he wouldn't have said a word. But because I wasn't, this idiot," I was going to say something else, but I won't do that on a podcast. "This idiot just went, you know, mental handicap. Am I going to argue with this person? Am I going to start up with this person? No, because I don't want to start up with this person. I just walked on. And now I use it as a case study."
It is that reality that if you can't see it, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And it's unfortunate, especially because, well, not only because every single person in their lifetime will have a disability of some sort. Like if we think about when we were a kid and like we broke our arm or something, that was a disability. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. You know, I just came back from a major conference in Denver, and I can't tell you how many people had broken their legs from skiing.
Oh, skiing. I was like, Denver. Why? Yeah. I was like, why?
Yeah. Denver skiing.
Yeah.
They moved the wrong way. And all of a sudden they're in a wheelchair with crutches. They can barely get into a seat. For that period of time, it's a disability to them. They don't get it. These are perfectly healthy people, active people, and all of a sudden something went wrong. Or they're going to be taking care of somebody with a disability. And their parents get older. Things happen.
And we forget easily once that is healed, whatever it is, you know, if it's a temporary disability, but we have all had that, or we will experience at some point. So it's interesting to me that the world doesn't view the baseline of daily life from all perspectives.
It's very interesting. And they don't. You know, here in Canada, and I'm going to say it, most places, a lot of us is behind the eight ball. They, you know, they use the budget word.
Yeah.
We don't have a budget. But you know what? You have to have a budget. This isn't something that you can put on a back burner. Take a little bit of, skim a little bit of the money off of the CEO's bonuses and put it towards this budget, because you have no choice.
The average accessibility cost is $300.
Right. You know, a little bit more with various companies, because if somebody comes in with a wheelchair, this is a fact. If I'm walking with my walker and I'm going for a job, and then there's another person who has the same qualifications that are similar. Nobody's got the same qualifications, but very similar qualifications, and they're perfectly fine. I can tell you who's going to get that job if I was in a wheelchair, because the first thing that's going to come to this HR person's mind is, oh my God, do I have an accessible washroom for this person? Do I have the proper desk for this person? Can this person get around? Is there an elevator from this floor to the next floor? I can't tell you how many buildings, you know, I was invited to an event where I knew my girlfriend knows the importance, critical importance of having an accessible venue. I knew she did. So I didn't even think twice until the day before. I figured, yeah, and I'll ask. So she says, absolutely. And I looked at the thing and I said, maybe you should check, because it was in an older building in Chinatown, something like that. And of course, 15 stairs to get into the building, but then there was an elevator. You know, it's not like you take a walker and you put it on your back like a backpack and you walk up the stairs. It doesn't work. I can't walk stairs, but I need to have somebody schlep my walker beside me. And what if somebody comes to this event? They come on public transport, they get there, and they're a wheelchair, and there's no way that they can get in there. You have to understand that this is the way of the land now. In Ontario, if you don't abide by the AODA, it's a $100,000 fine. That's a lot of money to a business. It's a lot cheaper to hire me and to train your people than it is for you to pay that $100,000.
How should we think about, not just for the workplace, but what you're explaining too, which is such a great point, a person should be able to go and receive entertainment, go to a doctor's appointment, go get their hair cut, and all have accessibility, have a way to get to those places, to be able to live a great life and the life that they deserve. How would you think about the terms accessibility and accommodations?
Fascinating question, Amy. I've never had anybody ask me that. I think it's a really smart question. Really smart question. I think that it's basically a lot of the same, because you have to accommodate the people who are disabled. As you said, I started off my business in size diversity in Canada, being the first brand ever to do a size diverse sustainable brand. And how did that come to fruition? It came to fruition because my late daughter, Allie, who passed at the age of 26, after 7 years of cancer treatment, she was diagnosed at 19. She had gained 80 pounds. She was incredibly fashion forward, like unbelievably fashion forward. And we were in Toronto at the time. You could pick up in the States a few things off and on, but you got nothing, garbage at that time in Toronto. And she had to go and buy some pants. And we went to a plus size store in a major mall. And she sat on the bench and she says, I'm not going into that store because I'm no different than anybody else. This was her line. I'm no different than anybody else. I deserve better than what she called Polly and Esther. Because at that time, polyester, if you were anywhere near a match, you'd go up in flames, right? And she says, I'm not different. And that's how we started Alley Style. Because we were a size diverse brand. We were not a plus size brand. We started from an extra small. We went up to a 3X at the time. We were made in Canada, but we were brand new to the gate. We were way ahead of the times, and we really made an impact in there. You know, I'd love to bring it back. Right now, I can't, until somebody comes over. Who knows? Maybe somebody on this call will say, yay, I want to partner with you, because it's a great brand. But the issue is being different. We wanted to celebrate women. And when you work, no matter what, you are celebrating the people who come to your business. And it shouldn't matter if they're in a wheelchair, if they have a feeding tube. As I said, I came from Denver from a major conference a couple of days ago, and I was coming back and I'm looking, and there was this gorgeous young woman who had all of her stuff and she had a feeding tube. And she was very quietly fixing this and doing this. You would never know. And that's the kind of thing that we have to do. People are people. It doesn't matter what race, what color, where they're coming from, or anything like that. A corporation has to accommodate these people in whatever way. A music hall has to. My son Shane is a huge music guru, whatever. He's a big guy in the music scene. And he'll come straight out and say to me, Mom, that's not what he calls me, handicapable. That's not handicapable. And it's hard. It's very hard for somebody who's disabled because they have no clue. It may say that it's accessible in Yelp. Can't tell you how many times I've looked up a venue and I get to it, and there's 15 stairs to get into it.
So then what do? You just can't go?
I personally can walk upstairs as long as somebody brings my walker up with me. I can do that. But a wheelchair person, they'd have to get two people to lift that person up at the same time that somebody's trying to lift up a wheelchair. And you know what it feels like to have to be lifted up? I was listening to a webinar of a VP of finance for a major movie company. And he's in an electric wheelchair. He had an accident and he became, I don't know if it's paraplegic when it's from the chest up, or yeah, he was able to work with his arms. And he's going for an interview and he gets into the door. And what he sees is 20 steps going up. He's with his brother in an electric wheelchair. Do you know how heavy those wheelchairs are? His brother carries him up, puts him on the floor, and then picks up this wheelchair and takes it up, puts him back in the wheelchair. The person goes to the reception, and the reception says, oh, you know, we had an accessibility entrance just around the corner. Do you think maybe these people could not have put a sign saying, if you need accessible assistance, please call or go or the door here or anything? Nobody would know. They only know the first door that says this big thing. Nobody else is going to know where to walk in. I've been to numerous events. We'll carry you. You're damn right. Nobody's going to. The only guy's going to. I don't even know if I'd even let a guy carry me, pick me up at any period of time. I want my dignity. It's hard enough for a person to, especially, let's say, somebody like me. I've been my own boss. And I say I get along with my boss really well, which is why I'm an entrepreneur. I don't argue with her. She gets get along really well. And the reason that I've always worked for myself is because there are a lot of times that my disability will just wipe me out and I have to fall asleep for a couple hours in the afternoon. If I'm working for somebody, I can't turn around and say, oh, nap time. Unless I was the CEO, then I could do whatever the hell I wanted. But I can't do that. They're not going to understand. So we are all fighting for ourselves, and we shouldn't have to do that.
And that's where it's going to be really interesting as we learn more and more about disabilities, and especially what you just named about if you need rest or a nap during the middle of the day, or some of the different things that are happening from a mental psychological capacity of asking for those accommodations, and more people realizing that they do need accommodations. An example for me is I now know that the lighting in the corporate space that I worked at was actually giving me migraines. And I didn't know that until much, much later. That may have been an accommodation, but also that would have been an ask that it would effectively have me working from home full time, which also wouldn't have been an option. So there's at the time of the leadership that was in place. So there's a lot of these things that are needing to be talked about. And what do we do when every single person walking through the door, which I think we're pretty close, might need some sort of an accommodation?
Very slowly.
Meaning, no, what I mean by that is like more and more people are realizing they do need an accommodation.
Oh, okay, okay,
whereas
yeah.
Whereas like in the past, someone would have just like, quote unquote, powered through it. Like I did, it was just like, I have a headache every day. And I was like, okay, this is my life.
You're right about that. People would just power through it. The challenges are from the corporate world is that because of the Privacy Act, you can't ask, oh, by the way, do you have a neurodiverse mental health challenge or something like that? You can't ask that. It's the environment that somebody walks into and they see that people are being respected. That's number one. But it's also the person to turn around and say, I have these issues. I really want to work for you. Is there a way of us being able to accommodate a bigger desk so I can get my wheelchair under it? Everybody has to have an accessible washroom now. But I was in Denver and I couldn't get into any of them because there wasn't a push button. It said big accessible washroom. They had the washroom, but you couldn't get in the door. I stayed at a hotel, Marriott, fabulous room, but I couldn't get in the door, Amy. It was a heavy, heavy, heavy door. And when I posted something, you know, without telling people, whatever, I didn't tell you what Marriott or anything like that. It was just one. I can't tell you how many people came. Well, Hilton was like this, and a Westin couldn't get in the door either. And I actually had somebody send me a DM to say, I'm in a wheelchair and I'm going to Denver. Do you mind telling me what hotel you were at? So I have to make sure that I can be accommodated. We always have to do that. There isn't anybody who has a disability always has to think three steps forward. When I came to this room, I was thrilled. They gave me the room. It was perfectly fine. I had a walk-in shower. All was good. The room was great. But the door was heavy. I had to maneuver myself. The door almost hit me in the head once or twice as I'm trying to get my walker in. There are so many areas that you think that people think that they are accommodating, and they're not. I was in the Westin Hotel in the airport. Every washroom you couldn't get in. Is it something in the States that you know, yeah, you can get in, but you got to make sure you got somebody with you at the door?
What would you tell to seemingly well-intentioned people that design the room state-of-the-art to be accessible? What would you help them understand to be able to think through the entire picture? To them, they think they've done a great job with the room.
First of all, you need to hire people like me to make damn sure that you don't miss the boat. That's number one. Because there's no, as I said, there's no way somebody in a wheelchair who is by themselves could get into that room. Unless they went all the way back down to reception to get somebody to come all the way up to open the door. And then they got in. That would have been their only option to get in. I would basically, you know, and I said this to some of the people. I said, listen, the room was great, but it is a whole picture. If the architects, if the engineers and all of these people don't get it, you are going to continue to miss this. I keep on saying that the people who are disabled understand it better. And then a friend of mine saying, well, you know what? I can understand the community of the LGBTQ+, and I'm not gay or anything like that. And she's right in one area. But when it comes to disability, you don't see it. It's no different. And I say this all the time. When you've lost a child, the only person who understands what you're going through is another parent who has lost a child. Nobody else can tell you that they get it. Because they don't get it. And it's something that we, as parents who have lost children, never want anybody else to get, because the agony, and it's agony every single day, every breath that you take. It's been 18 years and it's still agony. It doesn't get any better that I'm just living in testimony to her, and I've got the strength to be resilient. And that's the kind of person that I am. And I know that she would expect nothing less from me. But we understand it. And when I came up and there happened to be a doorbell or something, and I thought, I'm pushing that bell and I'm thinking that the door is going to, you know, maybe the bell would open the door and something would click. But no, it just rang a bell. And that's all it did.
I'm hearing that accessibility accommodations, making sure you have really an expert on staff.
Consultant.
To be able to opine on those things, similar to the way that I would share with a group of men about how they should think about if they're doing something for women. You know, so it's just having a person or several in the room that know how to be intentionally inclusive. Speaking of which, and your daughter, in your clothing brand, there was a post that you made about a month ago that resonated with me, and I have a question about it. I have worked in this fashion industry for over 18 years and agree with this article, and it's referring to, from Vogue, the inclusivity backslide in fashion size. When close to 70% of women are over a size 14, why are we going backwards in everything that is happening in size diversity? So tell me about this post. What is the backslide? And then I also have a question, is it does seem like for many years now, maybe for like a decade or more, the average size has gotten smaller and smaller. Like the same,
I've gotten bigger and bigger.
No, but it seems like the size, like a
You're
size.
talking about vanity sizing. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, so maybe we'll start with the post first and then I'll ask my follow-up question. So go
Okay.
ahead on the post.
Okay. So the post was basically something that came up with Ashley Graham, who is one of the top models. I'm not going to call her a plus size model because she doesn't like to be called a plus size model. And Emma Grade. And Emma Grade has the company called Good American that she did with Khloe Kardashian, another size diverse brand. And what they have alluded to is something that's been happening for the past 2 years, 2 or 3 years. And it started off with New York Fashion Week the past couple of years, where only 3% of the models were curve models, coming down from 30%. And what's happening is that people are not talking about it in the same way. And they're finding that the visibility of these issues, the conversation is not there. So it's starting to go down and down and down and down and down. And who better to start bringing this back up but the two top people in the category of size diversity? And it's true. I've been in this business since 2006. Ali Style was founded in 2006, but I didn't really start until a couple of years after Ali died. Ali died in July 2006. And you fight for this community. Why are you fighting? Because it's a negative community. Things that are happening with Ozempic, all of these drugs. And I don't have any problem with any of them. Nothing. The only thing that I had a problem with was Kim Kardashian going on Ozempic to lose 10 pounds to get into Marilyn Monroe's dress. That should have never left the Smithsonian. I had a problem with that. But I don't have a problem with anything that people, if people want to do whatever they do, it's their lives to do so. But the truth is that close to 70%, it's about 69%, and it's still hovering at this ratio, are people that are size 14 and up. The average of that community is a 16 to 18. So you're basically saying that close to three quarters of the market are these sizes. And the opportunity for good products. I'm not talking about some garbage that's going on. And I'm sure if you've read my post, you know how I feel about Shein, S-H-E-I-N, horrible brand, child labor, all of this stuff. But whatever they're doing, they're doing. I'm not into the major fast fashion, Forever 21 and all of this. I'm just saying that this is a market that is a 400 and some odd billion dollar market in the States. It's a huge market. And then there's the adaptive fashion market that I just read an article that in Canada, it's an $80 million market in Canada. And we have very little in there, adaptive fashion, accessible fashion. So these are all categories of people, women and men, that need products. And we are taking a back burner and things are just going down. The only fashion runway show was London that actually did it right. They had women with disabilities and they had fashion brands that were size diverse on the runway. I think maybe the odd brand, Christian Siriano, fabulous at what he does. He's like the leader when it comes to that. And then you'll have a few other brands. So that's really what I see happening. Your second question, I think, was talking about how the fashion itself is becoming smaller. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I will give you an example. I've lost a lot of weight recently. My metabolism was all screwed up, so I had to go on one of these weight loss things. And which is so much better now. I can really see the difference. Like I've lost over 50 pounds. So I can really see the difference of what I'm able to buy versus what I could never buy. There's something called vanity sizing. And somehow a size 14, they say it's a size 14, but it's really only, you know, a size 10 for whatever reason it is. I personally tried over, I'm not telling you a word of a lie, when I was larger, 55 pairs of jeans, all in the same size that I happened to be. Everyone fit different. And I never ended up buying a pair of jeans. So I could never find a pair that fit.
We don't know why they do this vanity
I
sizing.
have, well, because it looks better, right? Because it, you know what? Plus size, there are people who embrace it. And I applaud everybody who embraces it. But I am tired of going to Bloomingdale's or something like that. When I was larger, it was just last year. I've lost this weight just in a year. And having to go to the basement to take a look at what was going on in the plus size world. So if I am shopping, and the best people to talk about that is Universal Standard. They go from a 00 up to a 40. It's an American brand. Nordstrom. Now, Nordstrom used to be in Canada. After 10 years, picked up and walked out. Left us, which was very sad because we really liked shopping there. They amalgamate their sizes. So if I'm shopping with somebody who is a size 2, and I'm a size 14, and I like this blazer, and she likes this blazer, and I'm in Nordstrom, I can go to the same area, and they're all on the same rack. So a size 2 all the way up to a size 18 is on the same rack. I don't have to go someplace else. I can go and be in a change room with my friends. I don't have to say, I'll see you later, because I have to go into the plus size world, wherever it happens to be. So the world of size diversity itself is starting to go down. I don't know why. I wish I knew. I wish I knew what the answer was. But I do know that it is at the forefront of everything that I do to promote accessible fashion, promote what I call responsible fashion. Responsible fashion is the umbrella term for size diversity, for ageism, for modest fashion, for adaptive fashion, which is what accessible fashion is, for sustainable fashion, and for gender fluid fashion. It's all under this one umbrella. And I'm hoping to be able to bring some new initiatives to the states, because I think that, you know, it's not important. It's not important to the major trade shows that are around now, to the Magics or all these other people. But a lot of these brands are small brands, and they can't afford these major trade shows. They don't have $25,000 to rent a 10-foot booth. I did two of those trade shows when I was at Alley Style. At that time, it cost me $15,000, and I didn't sign one lead. So I get it. I really do.
So as it relates to accessibility, accommodations, accessible fashion, size diversity, where can we find you, Pamela?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Pamela-Shanehouse, where I'm going to be rewriting my post. And you can find me at the Shane House Group. So it's www.theshanehousegroup, and it's S-H-A-I-N, like Norman, House. But it's shanehousegroup.com. And I'm on Instagram, Shane House Group. Please connect with me. I'd love to hear from all of you.
Closing remarks as we start to wind down.
First of all, Amy, I enjoyed this. You know, when I asked you how long it was going to be, you'd say whatever, and it just zipped by. And I, you know what, every podcast that I do, I hope that I can educate one more person or another person to truly understand the importance of everybody being together and respecting people as they are. Because whether it is curvy, whether it's heavier set, whether it's petite, whether it's tall, whatever it happens to be, whether it's somebody in a wheelchair, walker, all of this. If people are parking in a handicapped spot and they've got the sticker, I can't tell you how many people park in handicapped spots that don't, but if it's a person who's got a sticker, there's a reason that they have this sticker. They have this sticker because it makes it so much easier for them to function. It takes less steps for them. They can get to the door easier. If weather is bad, they can get to their car easier. All of these things are not done because they are going out and saying, hey, we'll make up every excuse. They're doing it because it's necessary. And all they want is to be accepted at the same realm as anybody else. And the truth is, and I say this to so many realtors, where I can't get through the door, I can't get, you know, or anything like that, is my money looks exactly like a person without a disability. It's the same color. We have color in Canada, you don't, but it's the same thing. And we are entitled to be able to spend and enjoy, to make ourselves feel happy, whatever we choose to do, like anybody else does. That's my final words. And thank you for the privilege of being on this podcast. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks, Pamela.